You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hello, everyone. This is MLB.com Extras, American League Central Edition. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz. Thanks for tuning in again this week. We're going to do something a little different this week. We're going to ask for some bold predictions from our staff, looking ahead to the year 2016 for all the teams in the AL Central. Should be great fun. And should be some inaccurate guesses sprinkled in as well, because that's the way baseball works, right? But we'll have fun doing it. Thanks for tuning in. Here we go. Jeffrey, if we would have gone into the winter saying the Royals re-sign Alex Gordon, I think that would have been a bold prediction, would it not?
Yeah, it probably would have been. And it's really, it's certainly fired up the town. And, you know, once again, Dayton Moore and his staff is having a pretty good offseason, you know, getting Soria back and getting Chris Young back, and now, of course, the Alex Gordon signing, which, you know, honestly, we probably thought there was maybe a 20-25% chance they'd be able to find the finances to do it. But the way they backloaded the contract, you know, Alex was willing to take $12 million the first year, and 16 and then 20 and 20 in the last 3 years. And that allows, you know, Dayton to even have a little bit more wiggle room to go out and get another starter, perhaps.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I was going to go with our first of these bold predictions for 16. Yeah, looking ahead to the rest of the hot stove season, what do you see happening with regard to that search for a starter? Do they nail something down, you know, from a guaranteed big league contract standpoint? Do they do something more on the fringe, take a chance on a guy kind of standpoint? What is your prediction for that spot in the rotation?
I predict they will find someone that we've totally forgotten about again, which is what they, it's kind of their MO, excuse me, kind of what they did with Wang last week, you know, a guy that has been off your radar for a couple of years. He's been in the minors, and who knows if he'll be a success. But, you know, I tweeted out after that, you know, that going the Royals, he'll, you know, finish with a 3.23 ERA and fifth in the Cy Young voting, because that's just who they are. That's what they do. They find these guys, and pitching coach Dave Island, you know, finds some tiny mechanical thing, and suddenly the guy is, you know, a viable starter. And Dayton Moore is very adamant about going into the season with at least 8 viable starters. He's probably at 6 or 7 right now, so I fully expect that they'll get at least one more. It could be a, you know, cost-efficient guy, $4 or $5 million for a 1-year deal or something like that. Or, like I mentioned, it could be just some guy that we've completely forgotten about, that may have been out of baseball for a year or something like that, and suddenly you know, he's starting for the world champions.
You know, one reason the Alex Gordon signing was such a big deal and such an unknown going into the winter whether they'd be able to do it is obviously they're going to have a lot of expensive raises and arbitration here coming up with some of their core guys, you know, Kane, Bustak, Hosmer. I want to focus on Hosmer, who, of course, you know, was touted as a legitimate, you know, MVP in the making when he first came up to the big leagues. And, of course, he's had his ups and downs since then. Last season definitely trended in the right direction. 18 homers, 33 doubles, 93 RBI, Gold Glove Award, his third straight there. What are your expectations for Hosmer now? He's 2 years away from free agency. Obviously, you know, this is a guy who could be a premier target in free agency in a couple of years, and he wants to build up that value. And of course, he's a linchpin of this lineup. What do you expect for Hosmer in the year 2016, Jeffrey?
Well, that's probably going to be one of my bold predictions. Is I think he's just going to have a monster year, a breakout year, much like Lorenzo Cain did last year. We really didn't know. We still don't know Lorenzo Cain's ceiling, but he had a, you know, just a super year. And yes, Hos definitely trended in the right direction last year. But I think, and the Royal staff agrees that he still has a pretty high ceiling too. We haven't seen, you know, the full potential of Eric Hosmer yet. I'm predicting he might have a year where he go 25 homers, 110 RBIs, and finish maybe in the top 3 or top 5 in MVP voting. I think he's got that kind of talent. He's starting to realize it a little bit. This is the last year of a 2-year deal, and then he's got an arbitration year next year. He certainly wants to increase his value as he gets closer to free agency, but I just think he's going to have a breakout year, a monster year.
Let's start, first of all, with the hot stove season. Now, we know if the Twins are going to do anything at this stage in the game, it's probably going to be in the bullpen. Is that correct?
At this point, yes. I think at this point, the Twins are pretty much kind of only looking at bullpen help, potentially maybe a fourth outfielder type. But at this point, I think more than anything, with some of their minor league signings, I think more than anything, it's going to be a bullpen help.
Now, are there, you know, I don't want to put you on the spot, but are there any guys we know it's a thin relief market, so it's kind of a tricky area to address. Are there any guys remaining in free agency you think could be good fits, or do you think are the Twins almost better with some of their internal options, you know, some of those young, hard-throwing guys in the system? What are your thoughts? And I guess what is your prediction? Do you think they get something done here between now and spring training?
I think my prediction at this point, the Twins might not, or probably not going to make a big move here for a reliever. I think the Twins looked at that market early in the offseason and kind of saw some of these guys like Darren O'Day getting four-year deals, even lesser guys like Ryan Madsen getting these three-year deals, and the Twins have never given a reliever, you know, a multi-year deal. So my full prediction is the Twins will not give another multi-year deal to a reliever. Maybe that's not so bold because they've never done it before, but I think they're probably going to be more likely, maybe even potential of another minor league signing or two. I know that, you know, they signed Fernando Abad, a guy who's had some good years with the A's, as a left-handed guy that could potentially be a lefty specialist out of the bullpen for them, depending on how he does in spring training. But a guy who's kind of one of those deals where it's a minor league deal, the chance to make the club here in spring training. So I think maybe more like that, they might take a flyer on a guy. But I think my prediction is the Twins are not going to sign anybody, at least not to a multi-year deal as a reliever. Maybe a flyer on a one-year deal or a minor league deal, but I don't think the Twins are going to sign a multi-year deal for a reliever.
So the streak lives. The multi-year, yeah. The lack of multi-year streak lives. Looking ahead to the season, obviously the signing of Park was the big move for the Twins in this hot stove season, and it kind of all their other planning has kind of revolved around that as far as what they're doing with Sano and what they're not doing with Plouffe in the trade market. So much of their, I don't know how much their fortunes are tied to Park, but obviously a lot of their planning was tied to that signing, and deservedly so based on his pedigree in Korea. But we are going to put you on the spot here. Rhett, nobody knows how a guy's going to make that transition to the major league and transition to stateside ball. But what is a reasonable expectation in your mind for Park for his numbers for 2016?
I think it's reasonable to expect at least 20 home runs. I think the power is the biggest thing, you know, coming back from in Korea. They had at least 50 home runs each of the last 2 years. I believe it was 105 combined home runs. So I think he's going to have power. My bold prediction is I think he'll even reach 25 home runs this year with the real potential to even reach 30. So the power is definitely going to be there. I'm curious to see what his average is going to be like. But my prediction is I think he's going to hit about, you know, 275 with about, you know, 25 homers and maybe 80 RBIs, which the Twins would gladly take, you know, from him in that first year, kind of that adjustment period. Because I do think the Twins believe that it might be a little bit of a slow process at first, kind of like what we saw last year with the Pirates and Jung Ho Kong, kind of having a little bit of a slow Avery Wolf where he kind of turned it on and became one of the, you know, better shortstops in the league with the Pirates last year. I think the Twins would love to see a similar progression from Park where he kind of maybe even if he starts off slow, becomes, you know, better as the season goes along. So my bold prediction is that he'll reach 25 home runs and 80 RBIs and be a big part of the middle of the order for the Twins.
And obviously the Park signing, as I alluded to, it affects Miguel Sano from a position standpoint. They're going to try him out in right field, and they very much hope that experiment works out. Is it, you know, he played about half of a season. He played 80 games in 2015, 18 homers, 17 doubles. From a numbers standpoint, Rhett, do you think it's as simple as doubling those totals? I'm sure the Twins would take that. And then what is your bold prediction as far as the right field experiment as well?
Well, I think doubling those numbers, the Twins would definitely take that. But at the same time, I do think that, you know, it's bold, but I think it's certainly realistic. I think with the power that he showed, the power that he's shown throughout the minors, I mean, it's legit. I mean, he's one of the more, you know, more power than almost anybody, you know, as a young prospect in baseball. So I think the power is good. I think he has a legitimate shot to hit, you know, to hit 35 home runs this year and be the Twins' best overall, you know, player as an offensive player. But as you mentioned, defensively, I still have a little bit of my doubts to see how he does out there. He is surprisingly athletic for his size, but his size, you know, he is, you know, 6'4", 6'5", you know, 260 pounds, and 260 really is even a little bit on the lighter side for him. So for a guy of that size to be in the outfield is going to be and tough, and that's a big outfield too. It's like the Twins have a little outfield, and that right field can be tricky. But at the same time, you know, if guys like Josh Willingham or even Arcia or some of the guys the Twins have had in the outfield in recent years can handle it, there certainly is the potential of Sano doing that. And the Twins certainly believe that he can, but I'm definitely very curious to see kind of how that goes. I do think no matter what, the Twins will try to find that bat for Sano, no matter what it takes, just because, like I said, I think he's their best offensive player already at this point, even going into his second season. The big key for him is just going to be cutting down those strikeouts. The strikeout numbers were very high as a rookie, so you got to figure that'll come down. But yeah, bold prediction is the offense is going to be, I think, a big plus for the Twins this year. But defensively, I think not too much of a prediction of a bold one, but I do think that defensively he's going to struggle out there a little bit until maybe he gets his bearings, and then we'll see what the Twins decide to do from there. Whether he goes back to third base or if they think, you know, outfielder or maybe even first base on the line is where he best kind of is suited for.
In case you haven't noticed, and the Indians very much hoping to be in the thick of things in the AL Central in 16. They've made some moves to that end. The acquisitions of Mike Napoli and Rajay Davis. They've done some non-roster signings in the bullpen. Certainly a need JB from the left-hand side. Gorzolani, Detweiler, Joe Thatcher are all going to be in that group in spring training, competing for a job. But the theme this week is bold predictions for 2016. And because we still have some time left here in the hot stove season, I want to get your bold prediction. Do the Indians do anything else of substance between now and the opening of camp in Goodyear, Arizona?
You know, I don't think it's going to sound very bold to say that no, I don't think there will be a major move between here and when we get to Goodyear for the start of spring. I think the additions of Mike Napoli and Rajay Davis were kind of the big free agent moves to complement the roster that's already in place. And as we've discussed multiple times, I think what kind of complicated the situation was the fact that Michael Brantley will be returning. You know, I think that sort of muddled how the Indians could approach the outfield, you know, knowing that he was coming back. So, no, I don't think there will be any major moves. You know, maybe we'll see some depth moves in the weeks leading up to spring.
One name we've heard pretty consistently this winter, and even here in the later stages of the winter, is Juan Uribe. And that just points to the general uncertainty at third base with the way Giovanni Urshela, he battled some injuries, of course. He didn't perform that well offensively, although he definitely took this team up a notch defensively. So give me a bold prediction for 2016. Who is the opening day third baseman?
I'm going to go Jose Ramirez. I know that might surprise some, but I think, as you mentioned, there's just so much uncertainty surrounding Urshela right now. I think the fact that there still is continued interest in sort of an older player like Uribe kind of shows that they're still exhausting their alternatives there. You know, Uribe, they would maybe look to him for a one-year deal. You know, last I heard was his asking price would probably have to come down for the Indians to consider bringing him to the fold. But, you know, he would sort of make sense or make more sense as a partner at third base for a player like Ramirez, given that Urshela and Uribe kind of have similar splits. So I think given all the health issues last year, there's a chance they want to open Urshela at AAA, maybe get that confidence going again before they bring him right back up to the big leagues.
Especially with Michael Brantley out and, you know, Mike Napoli comes in and potential middle of the order bat run producer for them. But still, a lot of this team's fortunes will hinder on Carlos Santana having a strong offensive year. I think that's a somewhat reasonable assessment of things. But what is your what's your bold prediction for Carlos Santana? I don't know if you want to throw out any numbers or just general expectations for Carlos Santana 2016.
Well, I was going to say 50 home runs and a gold glove, but I think that'd be a little too bold. How about
that's
this
a hallucination.
One?
That's not a prediction.
Yeah, yeah.
A hallucination.
How about this one? In spring training, we will see Carlos Santana try left field. I think that is pretty bold. But I think he's shown a willingness in the past to be open to trying something new. We saw that with third base a couple years ago, and we also saw how that worked out. And he's also voiced a little discontent over being a DH or going down a path that would put him on the road to being a full-time DH. So I think it would not surprise me if he and Francona discuss the situation leading up to spring, and maybe they say, hey, if you want to be in the field more, you know, maybe let's try you out in left field, see what you look like. You've been athletic at first base. You know, let's see what you can do out there while Brantley's out. Maybe we can mix and match a little bit, work you into the lineup as something other than a DH. So I think that would be the bold prediction as we sit here right now. But I still think when we get to the end of the year, you're going to see majority of his at-bats coming as a designated hitter.
Still a game of musical chairs being played out there in the free agent market when it comes to the outfield market. Tigers are one of those teams that have, you know, you can look at them on paper and say they have maybe even a clear and pressing need in left field. or they could go with the roster as is. We know there's, you know, payroll implications, luxury tax implications there if they were to do something else. But the theme this week on the AL Central podcast is bold predictions. So I'm going to put you on the spot. I'm going to ask you to make a bold prediction. Do the Tigers go out and sign one of these free agent outfielders between now and spring training?
Well, I do think, and I think I'm willing to predict that the Tigers will sign an outfielder to a big long-term contract. But I think it's going to be J.D. Martinez. He's up for arbitration this year for the second time. He's
That's cheating,
years
Beck.
Out from free agency. And they've gotten burned waiting a little bit long on signing some guys in the past or trying to lock up guys in the past when they've been a year out from free agency.
Yeah.
There's a lot of indications. I wrote about it on Friday that if you're going to make a move to try to get him signed and try to ensure his future in Detroit, this is the time to do it. And I think he'd be receptive to it. But I also don't necessarily think it's going to be cheap.
Yeah, it won't be cheap. When you have obviously the breakout season in 14 and then not only back it up, but back it up in a big way in 2015 and win the Silver Slugger honor and go to the All-Star game and hit 38 homers, and you can put yourself in a really good position, especially at that age, entering his age 28 season. Sticking with J.D. then, Beck, what's your bold prediction for his 2016 season? I don't know if you want to throw out a number for home runs or just general expectations for him in the new year.
You know, I think he's got a real chance at a 40-homer season. He came awfully close last year. He's shown the willingness to work. And he's at that age where I think he's got a little bit more in him. I don't think we have to worry about a downside just yet. And I think because it took him so long to really flourish and blossom, that I think it's doable that as he gets even more of a read on pitchers, that you know he can make that jump and become really one of the elite home run hitters in the American League, maybe even challenge for a home run title, which is incredible to think about when you consider where he was 2 years ago, basically being released out of Astros camp and heading down the street from Kissimmee and signing with the Tigers a couple days later near the end of spring training.
Yeah, just an unbelievable story. And, of course, you know, he's still in those prime years. We know that, late 20s, and especially the way power develops. Could be in line for a huge year. How about another guy? We haven't talked about this guy much here lately. Nick Castellanos over at third base. You know, he kind of had an average offensive season, all things considered. I know it wasn't the grand step forward that the Tigers hoped for. What's your prediction for him in 2016?
Well, I think what the Tigers want to see from him is, you know, they want to see the average stabilize. He's got power in him. I think, though, what we haven't seen enough of is that opposite field hitting where he's able to go the other way on some tough pitches and be able to turn some swings and misses into some line drives and base hits. Some balls that'll fall in there. I think he's got it in him. I don't know if we're going to see a huge breakout just yet, although you know, it's a huge year for him because he's going to be coming up on arbitration eligibility next winter. But you know, I think we start seeing, especially if you judge off of the second half last year, I think we start seeing him kind of get over on that learning curve and start learning pitchers and start translating it into results. You know, he had a nice finish there. He got overlooked because the Tigers were out of it. But you know, I think this is the year that he becomes an offensive run producer for these guys in a little bit more consistent manner. You know, is it going to be a JD-type breakout? I don't know if I'd go that far, but I think we see you know, that batting average creep up, you know, maybe get him into that 270, 275 range, and you know, maybe a little bit more power. You know, maybe it could be a threat for you know, maybe start to approach those high teens, maybe even a 20-homer-type season.
We made some bold predictions about the White Sox in 2015 that did not go particularly well. But we're going to try again. The White Sox certainly encouraged their fans and even non-fans with the way they've attacked this winter. one of the worst performing offenses in 2015, and reshaping the catching position with Alex Avila and Diner Navarro, reshaping the infield with Brent Laurie, and of course Todd Frazier being the big move. And we're still waiting to see what transpires in the outfield. A lot of balls in the air there still in free agency here as we hit the mid-January mark. So as far as bold predictions go, that being the theme of this week's podcast, I want you to make a bold prediction and tell me what they do with their right field spot between now and spring training.
I believe that between now and spring training, bold prediction number one, Avisaíl García will be the right fielder going into spring training. It's been one of the more interesting off seasons I can remember for the White Sox. And one of the reasons is, you know, they're higher ups, they're basically not saying anything, which is fine. That's how they operate. You know, there's not like, I've seen other sort of incremental updates from other GMs around the game, but the Sox have pretty much stayed quiet and they don't talk on rumors. And when it's time to talk. So, you know, you don't know if are the Sox really far in, and that's great grammar right there, but are they deep in on Cespedes, or has it just been kind of casual conversation? You know, I know there was talk about them meeting with him at the GM meetings, and from what I heard, that was more of a casual thing. So how much, I don't want to say truth to it, but how deep is it one way or the other? But I've said from the beginning of the season that I thought if they were going to get one of the, you know, quote-unquote big three, which is Gordon, Upton, or Cespedes, that it was going to have to be a contract that fits them, not the other way around. That this was not going to be a six-year, $125 million deal or $130 million deal. Now, the only thing working in their favor is, you know, maybe these contracts just aren't out there for these guys. Maybe, you know, the money has been spent. And it seems, and you know this, Anthony, it seems like just when you think, oh, you know, they're going to have to settle for a one-year deal, or they're going to have to settle, in quotes, I should add, for, you know, $16 million a year over 3 years, someone comes in with a huge deal. Remember Prince Fielder, that kind of happened, where I think his was like early February, right, when he signed with the big contract with the Tigers. But I really think they've made some good upgrades, some solid upgrades. I'm not saying they're not going to add on at all in the outfield, but I think it's going to be more of a what people would view as an incremental piece as opposed to a high-end, you know, Cespedes or Upton type of deal.
Yeah, that's always felt more realistic. And, of course, you know, there's so many – we call it the game of musical chairs, where we're kind of running out of chairs in this free agent market.
Right.
So maybe the right price does fall in their hands, but we'll see. All right.
But, I mean, you also don't know if these teams were saying, oh, yeah, we're out, we're just looking at upgrades. Who knows if a team suddenly says, okay, we're jumping in here at 4 years, $80 million or something like that. You know, I mean, you never know on that thing.
We don't know a thing. That's the problem. but we can still make guesses, though. So for 2016,
bold predictions.
I want you to bold predictions. That's right, not guesses. That doesn't sound nearly as convincing. But bold predictions work. All right, I want you to focus on the holdovers from 2015 offensively.
Okay.
Who takes the biggest step forward offensively in 2016?
I will say on the holdovers, I would have to say, I think García is going to make a move. I'm one of the few in Chicago, fairly or unfairly, towards him, who still believe this kid has a lot of talent and this kid can get it done. I know people, I think, are a little worried about the situation because they had a guy out there in Dion Viciedo who had a little more power but was a similar type of guy to García. Good arm, not a great defensive outfielder. When he got hot, could carry a team for a little bit, but then also didn't have great command of the strike zone. I don't know if García is ever going to be a 30 and 100 guy, but I think you're going to see more of a commanding presence from him if he's given that chance. I really do think that you can't write off a guy. I know he's been around for a while, and I've said this 16 times already, but, you know, played in a World Series before he even had 60 plate appearances in the majors. But he's only had one season where he's had more than 260 plate appearances in a year. So I think you got to give the kid a chance, and I think he's going to make some strides this year for the White Sox.